Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Comptroller, and I like to say my friend, Tom DiNapoli. Welcome back, Tom.
Alan, good to be with you, and we're trying to stay warm here in the studio.
Yeah, no, it's very, very cold. I wanted to ask you, there was this big oil spill out in the Midwest, and then the question I have for you is, we've got a lot of oil tankers coming into Albany and other places. Do you have any concerns about this?
Well, I think everybody has concerns. I mean, obviously, the dynamic here in the Port of Albany is one that local officials have been focused on, citizens have been focused on. And as you know, as part of the governor's budget proposal, he's proposing to increase the amount of money we have that goes to the state's oil spill fund, and not only use the fund as it is now set up for remediation purposes if you have a spill or an incident, but also to allow some of that money to be used for what you might characterize as prevention purposes, planning, prepositioning of emergency equipment, and so on. All that's positive and responsive to the concerns that are out there. The difficulty I have with his proposal is that it would also break up what has been a very successful framework for dealing with this. For many years now, the oil spill fund has been administered jointly by the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Attorney General, and the Office of State Controller. And what the governor proposes, in addition to that increase, which I support, he would take away our involvement. And I think that's a mistake. It's working
well. And what would
be
bad about that, Tom?
Well, you know, DEC, and you know, we put out a report not that long ago that suggested there are concerns about adequacy of staffing levels there.
And that's the Department of Environmental Conservation.
You know, we also know that when the administration has prerogatives to use money intended for one purpose, sometimes it ends up being used on other purposes. Mm. And we have very clear accounting and accountability for how that oil spill money is being spent. And it's worked well. No one's ever questioned our administration of the program. So I really am concerned, not to use a DEC term, but a dilution of what has been the appropriate supervision of those monies would happen if in fact, we would lose our role in this. So if it ain't broke, you know, why try to fix it? We support the governor's call for more money because this is an area of concern. We support more money, some of which to be used for prevention purposes, but there's really no reason to change the oversight structure that we have.
No, this is Alan speaking. This is not Tom speaking. So I'm going to say something. This does appear to be right out of the Cuomo playbook, which is grab all the power you can from everybody else, even if it results in not as good a system.
Well, you know, what I've been pleased is that the environmental groups who care about this issue have supported the increase, but have said don't take it from the controller's office. The Association of Counties also put out a recommendation that said increase the money for the fund, but don't disrupt what's been a very effective and solid working program, which has the controller's office being involved in accounting for those monies. So, you know, again, I guess any executive, the desire is to have more prerogatives, but when it's at the expense of a program that's working well, I think I'm hoping the legislature will rise up and say, you know, no, not on this one. And I'm actually hoping that, you know, the executive also will back off on this one. We support the call for more money. It is an important issue right here in Albany. It's an issue. You see what's happening across the country in terms of these accidents and incidents. So,
well, yes, and this program is heard in virtually every part of New York State.
Yeah.
So wherever trains are parked. But, you know, you've been in the legislature. You were in the legislature for quite a while. You know the way it operates better than almost anybody I know. You've been controller with great distinction here in New York State. I mean, really great distinction. And, you know, you've gotten incredibly high marks from everybody. Why in the world, if you're the governor, would you continue on this business about aggregating your power, even though it works well when the controller is doing the auditing of the program? I don't get that, except if you're dealing with character. Now, that's my own statement, and I don't expect you to do more on it, but I am interested in the way, and I want to educate people as to the way that the executive budget works. He puts a controversial thing like this in the budget. Then you had this very interesting lawsuit, Pataki versus Silver, which says what?
Well, you know, back in the years when I was in the legislature, there was a concern about the executive adding in what is basically policy language in, you know, into appropriation bills. And there was a lawsuit, Silver, you know, obviously.
And the budget is an appropriation bill, right?
Yeah. Okay. And you remember in the old days when there was a concern about items in the budget, the legislature would often not vote on the budget till days, weeks, sometimes months afterwards. Well, the Silver v. Pataki lawsuit, you know, changed the, you know, the balance there to make clear that the executive did have a broad authority to include, you know, that kind of wording.
Policy wording.
The policy kinds of issues in there. So, and then you've had later court decisions that also would suggest that when a budget is if it's not enacted as part of the emergency appropriations bills, this is, you know, David Patterson's era, that, again, these kinds of policy choices can be inserted into the emergency appropriation. So it really changed the dynamic of the legislature holding up a budget not being a very smart strategy, because it would, in the end, you know, between those two court situations, really give greater power to the executive and having an upper hand in these negotiations.
Well, no question. This strengthens what I consider to be an already powerful governor, but okay.
And New York really arguably has the strongest executive, the strongest constitutional powers to any governor in any state in the union.
Okay, you know, so now Tom DiNapoli comes and he says, and I think you've been very fair about it, that they've put some language into this budget which would make us more risky. Our controller's office is there to make sure everything is being done according to Hoyle. Now, wouldn't be as a result of this. So my question would be, do you have any recourse? Is there anything you can do to get them to change their mind?
Well, you know, I'm certainly hoping by having the environmental groups, and we didn't solicit this, they, you know, and the Association of Counties come out to discuss it from a policy perspective, that that's going to have some positive impact. I mean, look, the question for this budget cycle is how much real negotiating will be happening. You know, will in fact there be the opportunity for the legislature and the governor to compromise on some of these issues? You know, and then the question, you know, we're not at the table, right? You know, I'm not part of the budget, contrary to what some people may think. We are not part of the negotiating team. It's between the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor. So the extent to which the legislature, with everything else they may want to change in the budget, they're going to make this a priority or not, you know, that's unclear. So, again, my hope is that cooler heads will prevail. The governor will back off of that piece because we are in agreement on increasing the amount of money there. You know, we'll see what will happen. But as you well know, and you've talked about on you know, your commentary in the morning and on the show, there's a lot packed into this budget and a lot of big issues. Obviously, the ethics issue particularly, that is really going to be the focus of much of the discussion that's going to happen. And the compromise, if it happens, or the battle and playing chicken as to who's going to relent. And, you know, where an issue like the oil spill fund will fit in versus ethics versus education reform and funding. I mean, these are big issues with big constituencies that are in a pitched battle right now. And that's the concern. When you put so much in a budget, you know, there are areas now, Alan, that when I first came here would be debated and discussed on their own. They'd be part of the legislative program. Often after the budget would be done in the spring, then the rest of the session through June, you debate these other issues. Now it seems like everything's being done as part of the budget process. You're not really getting as complete a debate and airing on those other issues when so many policy issues are just jammed into a budget process, which, you know, everybody's positioning now. Everything's been delayed this year because of what happened with the Speaker Silver. How are they going to get all this done and get it done on time and get it done in a thoughtful way where we actually have a budget that's not only good on the numbers, but is thoughtful in terms of the policy choices that are being made? And the big question marks about how they're going to do that.
So we have a new speaker, Speaker Carl Hastie. What is your sense of how his newness is going to affect this process?
Well, you know, look, there's no doubt time was lost, you know, with the whole process. And that's part of why the legislature, the assembly rather, moved up their time frame even for, you know, for filling. And there's some criticism of that. But I think they just, once they knew who it was going to be, they said, let's get it done so we could get back into business. And, you know, the assembly has lost some staff even prior to the new speaker. So I think they're getting up to speed. You know, there are a lot of very smart staff people there and, you know, certainly a very experienced hand in Assemblyman Denny Farrell continues to chair the Ways and Means Committee. So I think they have the capability to keep it on time. You know, the question is, you know, with Carl as a new speaker, you know, to the first out of the box challenge of getting the budget done with many members now, a lot of newer members who feel very empowered, you know, by the change. You know, he's
by
got
the change, meaning speak.
Change in leadership. Yeah. Also, what are they, 106 members? That's a lot of folks you got to keep happy in a budget process. So I think, you know, Carl is up to the task. He's a smart fellow and great experience in the, you know, the political field. So I think he'll know what to do. But it's going to be a test. And, yeah, you still have the issue in the Senate where the Republicans have their majority. It's a very slim and a tenuous one. You know, the Senate majority tends to be a more homogeneous group than the Assembly majority. But there's still a lot in play in terms of the dynamics of both of those majorities. Which, again, if the legislature's majorities are in a weakened condition, that will only strengthen the hand of the governor in these negotiations.
Let's go over to education a little bit. Now, we know that Andrew Cuomo has taken on education as an issue that he, for whatever reason, I happen to think it's not smart, but he's done it. And the teachers and Cuomo are now at war with each other. Have you been able to look at education as a, look, you've been around a long time, you know your stuff. Have you been able to look at this as a substantive issue and to give us any insight into what's really going on?
Well, you know, there's no doubt that, again, putting aside the argument about adequacy of state aid and how you distribute it, you have all these other issues, you know, with teacher evaluation, particularly being you know, tenure changes, all this being tied in. And in fact, as you know, the governor proposes a healthy increase, you know, $1 billion or so. But it's tied to his reform agenda, you know. So
I would just change that to his so-called reform agenda.
Yeah, well, but it does get back to the issue I raised earlier. Some of these issues should be debated in a thoughtful way from the perspective of good policy, not necessarily held hostage to a budget process. So you already saw for school districts, they didn't get their school aid runs, you know, which are the printouts that guide school districts. It's not the final word, but it is an important piece of their putting together their own budgets, you know, with the budget votes coming up in May. That's not there. So, you know, I do have a concern that there's so much being jammed into, for lack of a better word, the education discussion. What should be the thoughtful budget discussion, which is how much money do we have available to go to education? And in New York, the complex issue is not just how much money. It's how you distribute that money. Mm. You know, so if we're going to now be sidetracked and debating all these other reform and teacher profession issues, they're important issues. But, you know, who's really going to be taking the time to look at how state aid, what's the number? A lot of debate about the inadequacy of the overall number. And you still have the CFE decision from years ago that was never fully implemented. You know, I just worry that we're going to get sidetracked in areas that will keep our eye off the ball in terms of really grappling with that question. Look, when I was in the legislature, Alan, you know, I remember coming up here and I ran like everybody else did. Got to fight for our schools and getting our fair share. And, you know, I sat in the Democratic conference and I'm sitting there. And all the years I was in the legislature, I've never heard a legislator say that their area's gotten their fair share. Fair is truly, you know, beauty in the eyes of the beholder. So it's your perspective on where you sit. And every legislator, of course, is going to advocate for their school. So if you have a low wealth, high needs district, you're going to feel the formulas need to be more favorable to you. If you're in a community, as many of the districts I represented, where they had a high tax base, but very little state aid went to the district, so it resulted in very high property taxes, you're gonna take another perspective. So we seem to never engage, though, in a thoughtful discussion of, we'll never get to the question of what's fair, because again, that's a very, you know, perspective driven by what community you represent, but a more objective look at, you know, what is the number we really, as an ideal, want to have for education funding. And how, I mean, there's no doubt that there are certain districts where if you target the needs in terms of the pupils that are there, districts have been shortchanged. And I think we need to acknowledge that, and we need to figure out a way to get to that money. You get, as you know, the debate is always on that question of shares, which is one of those side issues in Albany that most folks don't have a strong handle on. But it gets into that issue of regional distribution and where the Senate has been very particularly protective of that balance. There's a lot going on. And, you know, from my point of view, there's no more important investment than an education. There's no greater calling than being a teacher.
Yep.
And one of the things I worry about, without getting into the, you know, all the nuts and bolts, one of the advantages of being controller is I don't have to weigh in on some of those education issues per se. But I tell you what I hear when I'm out there, educators who are very frustrated and not sure they want to stay in the profession. And worse than that, young people who are thinking about becoming educators, thinking about becoming teachers. You know, the time was when the best and the brightest wanted to be teachers, regardless of compensation or anything else. And now a lot of them are saying, gee, you know, when I talk to folks who are in the profession, they're unhappy. you know, all the testing, all the evaluation issues, all the controversy. Maybe that's not really what I want to do. That concerns me, because if we get to the point where a portion of the best and the brightest that aren't just driven by earning power, that they don't want to be teachers anymore, that just is a downward spiral. And as one who is a product of the public school system in the state of New York, I worry about our future when we're not going to be able to attract and retain quality people in the ranks of the teaching profession. So a little more civility, a little more respect for, you know, what the end game on all this is, which is making sure our kids have excellent teachers that can inspire them in the classroom. If we're losing that, that's a real problem for us.
Let's assume for a second that because of all the things you've been talking about, education, ethics, and everything else, the budget is late, Mr. Comptroller. What happens when you have a late budget? We just had a poll that showed people were more concerned about a late budget than ethics among their legislators.
That's interesting, right?
Yeah. And so what are the downsides of a late budget? You know this better than anybody.
Yeah. Well, you know, the biggest downside, and some of it's a question of how late it would be, what the duration would be, is that local governments, particularly schools, because they come up first with their budget votes, if they don't know what their level of state funding is going to be, how do they plan? Sure. How do they anticipate? And that was a problem in the years when you had those late budgets. It certainly sends a bad message in terms of the functioning of state government. So I think that there'd be a, considering the fact that we've had these on-time budgets now for 4 years, there'd be a perception that we're going backwards. And I think in terms of the psychology, how the rating agencies would look at us, that would hurt us. Again, in terms of the power politics, you could really face a situation where, depending on what the governor would put into emergency appropriations, he may try to put in his agenda in a way that the legislature will be stuck with. We vote for that and lose certain battles, or we don't vote for it and state government shuts down. Now, we haven't had that kind of a threat, you know, realistically in many, many moons.
Now, I do remember, Tom DiNapoli, I do remember, we were just talking about it on the radio, when things got so bad that the legislature wouldn't get paid.
And that would kick in again.
They wouldn't get paid, yeah. And then they had to be paid in what we call script. You would put out script, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting. That hasn't happened for a long time. The years when, so remember, the change to not have legislators get paid because of a late budget was a Pataki-era change, right? That was tied to pay raise in charter schools.
Sure.
Interesting how certain issues, you know, keep coming back. So the script issue was also for state employees, but I think it goes back to the Carey days when that was I don't recall if it was a threat or whether it actually happened for a short period of time. But we haven't been in these waters of, because what happened, even when you had the Pataki era change where the legislators weren't paid, you still had emergency appropriations that kept state government functioning, state employees being paid. If you actually have a budget that expires and no emergency appropriations approved, we haven't been in those. So you're talking not just about legislators not getting paid. You're talking about vendors not getting paid. You're talking about local governments not getting money. And you may be talking about state employees not getting paid. If there's no emergency appropriation, there's no authorization to spend money.
Now, Governor Cuomo says, you know, that he's put these, quote, you know, non-negotiable ethics provisions in the state budget, as you have so well described. And now we really are looking at who blinks first. Mm. And as the comptroller, the guy who handles all the money, this has got to be of some concern to you.
Well, it should be a concern to everyone. Yeah. And I don't think the governor's wrong to say ethics is a huge issue and we've got to deal with it. I think you'd be living on a deserted island if you didn't have that point of view. But, you know, it's got to be a discussion. You know, the legislature, obviously, the best outcome would be for, and with the change in leadership in the assembly, I'm hoping we can have this, a real openness to talk about reforms in terms of disclosure, first and foremost. There needs to be a discussion about changes in travel reimbursement, the per diem system. And Speaker Hastie, to his credit, has said he wants to look at that. He's reached out to me, and, you know, our staffs are going to be talking about that. Some would argue, as you know, changing that system completely. But either way, there needs to be big changes in that area. And then ultimately,
we're talking about how when legislators come to Albany, they get a per diem amount every time. And some people have been accused, including the speaker, of having basically abused that.
Well, and you've had one legislator convicted on charges related to that and one legislator who's been charged, you know, with charges pending in that area. So, you know, we've done work in our office with our auditors and the prosecutors involved there. So it is an area where you need to focus. And longer term, Alan, I think you do need to have the discussion of what do we want the legislature to look at? Should it be a full-time body with severe restrictions on income like Congress?
What do you think? You've been there.
You know, I'm not a lawyer, right? So, yeah. I'm not a business owner. So for me, you know, I basically was full-time. I was an adjunct professor off and on, you know, for $2,000 or whatever it was. Yeah. I was full-time, you know, and many of my colleagues were full-time. And I think Nyberg, someone just put out a study that showed that the majority of legislators don't have any significant outside income. So I think the reality is, whether we call it that or not, you essentially have a full-time legislature with some of the senior people in leadership, not so, having, you know, lawyer relationships. To me, you know, while no one's system is perfect, I would tend to favor the congressional model. You know, you got to make a choice. If you want to do public service, you know, New York is a sophisticated state, you know, $140 billion budget. You're like the board of directors, you know, making it full time with perhaps some cap, you know, on outside income. Like, I think the congressional model is probably the best model. You know, again, whether we'll get there.
And the congressional model, just for a refresher, is?
You get I forgot what they get paid now, but it's certainly more than state legislators get paid. It's 170 or something like that. And then there's a cap. I think it's up to 15% of that in terms of outside earned income. You know, the issue becomes if you're a small businessman, if you're a lawyer that's not, you know, that's actually doing, you know, legal work, you know, in terms of direct service for clients, whether you can totally limit that. But, you know, clearly the current system has been one that does not inspire great confidence right now. So, you know, the model of, you know, the old notion of a part-time legislature and kind of a citizen legislator, I think that's a model of the past.
I only got a minute left, but I wanted to ask you this. Chris Christie is now apparently in big trouble in New Jersey because he didn't put the required amount of money
that his own reform legislation required. So
yes.
We don't have that problem in New York.
We
do not have that problem. Well, we pay our bills, you know, and on time. We have our amortization program, but again, that does require a bill, most of which has to be paid. You can amortize a piece of it for an interest charge. But that's why we're not in the trouble New Jersey's been in. We understand the importance of keeping our fund well-funded.
And the fund is doing very well.
92% right now. Funded. We just had another positive quarter of return. Fingers crossed, we're heading to March 31st. That's when we value the fund. Hopefully, we'll have a good year as we value the fund on March 31st.
So when you say 92% funded, what does that mean?
Of your liabilities, we're 92% funded. That's like one of the best funded status of any pension plan in the country. So the ideal is to get to 100. We're moving back towards it. We had losses after 08 and 09 with the global financial crisis. But 92, that, you know, you look at Illinois, they're like at 45% funded. We are in really good shape.
Tom DiNapoli, the state took in $9.2 billion in tax receipts last month. And now that's lower than expected personal income tax collection. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, the year actually had been having revenues up higher than projected. Now, there seems to have been a slowdown as far as personal income tax revenue. We'll see. We got to keep a close eye on this as we head to the closeout of the books for the year on March 31st. For the year, we certainly could still end up in a positive condition. We've basically been tracking pretty close to projections, and we do expect an updated financial plan, you know, from the budget office. But that's, again, a cautionary tale that we're not totally out of the woods in terms of this economy and the tax revenue coming to the state. So I would more call it a yellow light of caution, not a red light of great concern, though.
Tom DiNapoli, we love it when you come here. We know it takes a great deal of effort. You're a very busy man, obviously. You put your green eye shade on and you audit all of those books and you have to deal with governors and legislators, and we're counting on you to keep it all honest. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.